Alan Crane Productions, in association with the Emergent Life Studio, present the Illinois State Collegiate Compendium, Academic Lectures in Business and Economics. This is Business Finance, FIL 240, for autumn semester 2025. Today, annuities and perpetuities and applications of time value of money. In a little while, I had a request from a student from some years ago. She's has some internship available, and I am going to have her tell you about some internships up in Chicago. And just because this is when you should be thinking about last minute, if you want an internship, these are really, really good paying up in Chicago. So I'll give her a few minutes on a Zoom session with you here after I've looked at the numbers for a few minutes. The markets are in a pretty quiet position right now. As you can see, it's kind of strange because the Dow, which usually is the most unreactive, is having a bull day. It's closed now, it's closed now. But although the S&P 500 is down and the NASDAQ is down more, the best thing that I've heard about this was last evening, I got a DM from one of my traders up in Chicago saying that there are two different schools of thought about what's coming at us. There is the one school that believes that everything is great because we have the ultimate in pro-business, White House and Congress. So everything's going to be great down the road. The other school of traders is saying this is not what's going on at all. We have a situation where the economy is heading into the toilet. We can't get correct numbers, truthful numbers from the government, but the private data collectors are all pointing to we are in a recession right now, and it's going to get really deep and really bad no matter what the government says. So you've got two competing, you got the bears and the bulls, and so everyone's just kind of staying quiet right now. They're just kind of, well, let's see which one starts to play out here. And so it's going to be a process, and by this time next year, we'll know, just by what we see around us, which way it went toward an incredible economy based on a new model of a pro-business model, or a catastrophic economy because of that new model. We'll have to see which way it goes. And I want to take it down here just for a second. As you can see, I point this out, that notice that the crude oil is just staying in this quiet range, a very stable range, because there is so much oil out there coming out of the ground, in the reserves, on the high seas, in the refineries. It's just a glut of oil right now. It's not so much a mystery, but why isn't the price of gasoline lower? With these kinds of oil prices, you should see gasoline $2.99 a gallon. It's not there. It probably is a result of the large oil companies firming up their profits by getting the product cheap, getting the oil out of the ground cheap, and then they can just mark it up at the gas pumps, and no one can do anything about it. That, if that's correct, eventually you will see competition set in, and you'll start seeing some gas stations lowering their prices considerably, and that will force the other higher priced gasoline places to drop their prices too. But that, again, is not something that's probably going to come for a while. Not this month, maybe not even next month. But anyway, something I wanted to point out here is, for once, it looks like they're quoting the bond yields. Now, see this 10-year bond? That is a yield. This is called the benchmark, this 10-year Treasury bond, because all interest rates follow this. they will be more than this because treasury bonds are very safe. So corporate bonds, things like that, or mortgage loans, car loans, they would have a higher price because they're not as riskless as a 10-year treasury. But they do show the same pattern. And right now, this yield is down from where it has been. It's been falling on expectations that the Federal Reserve, under extreme political pressure, is going to lower interest rates, knowing as we do that that's going to lead to a big flash of inflation in 6 to 12 months. But they're bringing down interest rates. So these lower interest rates should stimulate purchases, borrowing. In other words, home loans, more people will take out, buy a house on a home loan because mortgages will go down. Car loans, the APRs on them will go down. However, that probably won't matter much because car prices are skyrocketing because of the tariffs on cars. Well, that shouldn't bother American car makers. Yes, it will. They're not stupid. If prices of their competitors' cars are going up, they'll bring theirs up too. So there's a counterbalance back and forth there. So, however, lower interest rates supposedly will juice the economy. Whether or not they really do, that's speculative because of increasing prices. Inflation driving prices up. However, those are lower interest rates, so that's good news for all of us. A quick note here is that these numbers, keep these in mind. I'm not above, by the way, we will have a surprise quiz on Wednesday, so please be surprised by it and make sure that you are ready to go with this chapter 5. I don't have a whole lot to finish up with today, mostly just a little bit of mathy kind of stuff that you don't really need to know, and a couple of formulas, some terminology. But that's mostly what's left of chapter 5. Just make sure that you can use the spreadsheet that I gave you to get the problems done. Without further ado, I think I'm going to be able to pull in this is a former student from quite a while back, very successful now, and she wants to do back for ISU by seeing what she can do as far as getting some internships available to ISU. The background is a lot of these companies, St. Louis, they're always hiring Mizzou. Chicago, they're always hiring from Northwestern, University of Chicago, those kinds of places. We're getting noticed now, and part of that's because our people are out there now in some of the heavier positions, and so we're doing what we can to get them to help hire a Redbird. So there's no, obviously. Am I blurry, or is this? Am I having a stroke?
No, you're blurry.
Well, that's obvious, but I mean, what? Damn it! What's going on with this? I know.
I think you're better.
Oh, sorry. And now, in the last class, I forgot. And she was calling the advising office to remind me that I had this Zoom session set up. And here I am now. I started the meeting, I thought. I oftentimes will put in extra tweaks into spreadsheets. And I've done one for that present and future value. So if you would, go into Canvas, into Files, and go down to your spreadsheets and download that present and future value. Now, it'll say overwrite what you got. Well, yeah, just go ahead. And this happens from time to time. Now, the old one is certainly still useful to you if you want to just keep that one. But this one has a little extra thing that I threw in. There is a problem in present and future values. where you have to find the year that a certain amount of money doubles. Okay, you put in $10,000. How many years will it take for that to double? Now, that is actually a rather tedious algebraic exercise. It involves, if you remember back from algebra, to solve for an exponent, which the years, a number of years is, you have to use logarithms to bring the exponent out in the problem so you can solve for it. Interestingly enough, though, at the end, you've got a formula for finding out how long it takes a certain amount of money to grow to a certain other amount of money. And in what I do here for you is I have actually baked in to, well, there it is again. That's not the right one. That's not the right spreadsheet. Am I in the right class? Fall 2025, 240.01.02 it is. Why is it now actually one? Oh, there's another one in there. Look at that. I've got to get rid of that. That one is not right. There's are two in there. It doubled over. Instead of replacing the first one, it. So I've got to download the second of the two that you see. And my apologies for that. I will delete that first one because that was the one before I added this little tweak. Okay, that's better. That's what I wanted to see. Okay. Now, in the latest version of this, let's try that one more time. In the latest version of this, I have put in to the first one, the lump sum present value future value, I have put in one to calculate that time to value. In other words, let's say that I had, let's say, $8,000. Suppose that I start with $8,000, and I want to know how long it's going to take to double that. So I want to know how long it's going to take to turn that $8,000 into $16,000. And let's say that I'm putting it into an account that compounds, let's say, twice a year, semi-annual compounding, and I put it into a CD that pays, let's say, 5.89%. It would take 11.94 years to double it. That is all you need to know how to do to get a problem like that correct in your Cengage homework or in a quiz or an exam of mine. I don't even have to say double. Suppose that I put in, let's say, $5,000, and I've got an interest rate of, let's say, 4.89% compounded quarterly. How long would it take for me to turn that into $8,000? It'd take 9.7 years. This, and if you look at the actual machine that is doing this calculation, see all those logarithms in there? That's what Cengage expects you to be able to do. That's the way you do it, is with logs. Fortunately, you can just bake that into a formula for Excel to use. And as you can see, the actual formula is that you take the log of the ratio of the present to the future to the present value, and divide that by the number of compoundings per year times the natural log of 1 plus the periodic interest rate. That is all done by this formula for you. You just need to know where to put the numbers. The PV is how much you have now. The FV is how much you want to know how long it'll take to get to. I can say, okay, what about if I said, how long will it take me to get to $12,000? take 18 years. And if you did that by hand, it would be quite a long time, especially if you used accounting tables. Accounting, you still use as tables of present and future values and all that. This saves you that pain. Just make sure you know how to do this. The modern corporate world really doesn't need you to show how good you are with pencil and paper and a calculator. There, almost every business is now carrying itself on in the Excel. And that's why a lot of companies now, regardless of what part of the company you're working in, they're going to want to know if you can prove that you are good at Excel. Simply saying Excel, companies have gotten very aware that everyone's putting "I know Excel" in their skills and on a resume. What proves that you do is a certificate number that says, yeah, you've taken training in Excel. And so that's why I require in this course that you come out of here equipped to be hired for one of the skills that is commonly expected in the corporate workplace. Madam, here. Test. Select the speaker. Microphone. Speakerphone. Can you hear me? You're dead. Okay. Let's see.
I can hear you perfectly.
There, now I can hear you perfectly.
Okay. Thank God you figured it out. Thank God.
Well, that was weird. Okay, I'm going to let you talk, and you, and I'll shut my pie hole.
Oh, thank God for that.
Yes.
Well, hello everyone. Although I can't see anyone but Professor Jesus Christ.
There's your damn audience.
Thank you. To briefly introduce myself, I was previously in your shoes. I graduated spring of...
If all things go according to my plan, you will be able to leave a little early today. But I have to tell you a few things about annuities and perpetuities, and I might spill a little of it into Monday's lecture, just the terminology. As I had told you, an annuity is nothing but a flow of cash flow. The thing of it is that in that regard, there are different kinds of annuities, and you can divide them up in several different ways. One of the ways that you can divide up annuities is into level versus non-level. Now, for this class, we will deal with level annuities for the most part. We'll step into the world of non-levels. Level just means that it's the same amount every time. Remember, an annuity is a pulse of cash coming in. You're either taking it out into the future or you're bringing it back to the present. Now, if it's the same amount, it's level. $200 every 2 weeks, $200, $500 every month, something like that. Your car payment every month. Those are level. They're the same amount of money. Non-level would be different amounts. They are a little more of a pain in the butt. With levels, all you have to do is tell Excel once what the payments are. With non-levels, you have to list them, one after the other after the other. Non-levels happen more in corporate finance, where, like, your company, you have profit. But it's not going to be the same profit every month or every quarter or every year. So that'd be a non-level. Dividends are another example. For younger companies especially, the cash flow has, the amount of the dividend is different every time. So these are a little more of a pain in the butt, but still Excel, you just have to list each one of the payments. With a level, you just tell Excel once, this is what is coming in every so often, and then it's okay. Now there's another kind of division I can make. Periodic versus non-periodic. Periodic means that they are at the same time intervals. Your paychecks, those are periodic. Your loan payments, those are periodic. They happen at the same time every month or every week or every 2 weeks. Non-periodics are more of a pain. Again, Excel can handle them. You just have to tell it the number of periods. If you have to do non-periodics by hand, they really get to be a pain. Let me give you an example. In my own company, I have periodic revenues. Every month, Amazon releases to me what my how much I've made through sales on my Amazon storefront. So that's periodic. However, art shows and exhibitions, those happen when they happen. I might have 6 weeks or a couple of months between two shows, and then I have shows every week or every 2 weeks. So there's, in that case, I have a periodic component, and then I have a non-periodic component to my revenue stream. So yeah, they are out there. And I don't recommend you try to rely on those, because they're complicated. Because the way I usually do it is I take an annuity, the annuity that's periodic, separate it from the non-periodic, and then I deal with the easy one, the periodic, with a quick formula like the ones that you have here in this spreadsheet. And then the non-periodics, I just deal with on their own by taking the present value of each one as it occurs, regardless whether it's 2 weeks or 6 weeks or whatever. Okay. That is one way that you can divide up annuities. There's another part to annuities, too. There are ordinary annuities, and there are annuities due. Ordinary annuities, each payment is at the end of the period. You take out a car loan, your first car payment is due a month later, at the end. An annuity due, the payments are at the beginning of the period. Now, you might, okay, so in other words, your first payment is right away. Excel handles this very elegantly. Let me show you here. Let me do the annuity spreadsheet. You tell Excel whether it's an ordinary annuity or an annuity due with a 0 or a 1. 0, you're telling Excel that this is an ordinary annuity. A 1, you're telling Excel that it's an annuity due. Typically, present value annuities, finding the present value of an annuity is an ordinary annuity. A future value is almost always an annuity due. Let me explain. Sometimes I've gotten this question, well, when would you ever pay right away, immediately? Well, that has to do with especially with investments, a special kind of investment. And I'll give you an example. Let me try thinking of an investment. You, sir, have a significant other. Okay? We imagine that this is a young woman, and you two are very happy together. And one day she says to you those three words that change your life. You know what those three words are? They're not, I love you. That's three words, but that's not. She's saying, I am pregnant. Yeah, it happened to me. I looked around for razor blades, you know. But I man up. You know, you got to man up. Face your responsibilities. And so the day of the birth, that day, I've been through five of these. And let me tell you, I was exhausted after that birth. I was tired. I mean, wore me out. Okay. I mean, man, I don't know how she was doing, but I was wiped out. Went out and got burgers. White Castles. 10 of them. Okay. But you feel this urge. I've got to make good for this kid. I'm going to, right now, on the 0th birthday, I'm going to put $2,000 in the bank. And every birthday that kid has, I'm going to put $2,000 more in. You see how that's an annuity due because they're happening at the beginning? And then on the 17th birthday, that'll be the last payment. So there'll be a total of 18 payments in there. And then I'll let that whole plop ride to the kid's 18th birthday and pull it out. That's a classic annuity due. What you've made, what that account is, on the 18th birthday, you had 18 payments, and then that whole amount rides one period out, and you have an amount that you take out. You give it to the kid and say, here, get out of my house. That's an annuity due. So let's say we want to, that would be a future value. You want to know what it's worth one period after the last payment. So we'll do the 18 months. Now, in this case, since you are putting the payments in once a year, that forces it to be a one compounding per year. That just causes it to happen. And let's say that you're putting that money in at, let's say, 4.59% into some good account, and you're putting in $2,000 every month to do that. The amount you'd pull out on the kid's 18th birthday would be $56,646. That's all there is to it. Now, if you did this by hand or with accounting tables, it would take you a while. Here, all you need to know how to do is put the numbers in the right places, and you get your answer. This is a practical thing. Financial planning is actually, its core is just this. You tell your client of well-to-do family, says, okay, we wanted to buy a new car in 3 years. We want to have a new home in 7 years. And you get them all their goals out here. You figure out what amount they have to pay every month or every 6 months or whatever to achieve those future values one by one. You add up those payments and you say, write me a check today for it, and we'll make all of those dreams come true for you. That's the core. And their annuity due because you want to start this today or tomorrow or something like that. So you're going to be calculating something like this, except for a bunch of different values put together. And so that kind of blows the complexity of it. The real issue is just setting up the portfolio that will yield a good result. In other words, that 4.59, how much can we do it? Look what happens if he can find an account that pays 4.99%. Let's see how much he has at the end of 18 years. A little more. So in other words, the goal here is to get the best yield on the investments so that what comes out is the best number. And of course, loan payments I put here because technically loan payments are nothing but ordinary annuity. In the case of loan payments, you want to buy, let's say, a car. Oh, let's try this one. Suppose, and this one's a classic, you don't even need a financial planner for this. You say to yourself, okay, I want to have a decent down, I want to buy my own home, and I want to have a decent down payment so that I can go into a bank, get a lower rate because you know you're putting skin into the game. So let's say that I was planning on buying I'd like to buy a $150 house. and I'd like to have a 5% down payment on that. So I would want, in a case like that, to be able to put in for 5 years, 100, let's try $100 every month into an account that pays, let's say, 3.99%. If I were to, say, put in, let's say, $100 every month, would that be enough to have about $7,500? Not quite enough, but you're getting there. We could try, okay, how about if I put in $125 every month? Yeah, somewhere between $100 and $125. If you did that disciplined every month for 5 years, you could walk into the bank and say, I'd like to buy a loan. They'll say, well, 100% financing. No, I'm going to put a down payment on it. They're going to be more favorable to you given your credit score, and they're going to also probably be able to work your interest rate a little bit better than the typical interest rate that they charge on 100% financed home loans. That's just the reality of it. So this has practical implications for everyone involved in it. And the only other one that I'll just put that off until I'll do that the first thing on Monday, are perpetuities, which are infinite flows, and how you can use those for very practical, how we use them in universities for a very practical purpose. But that's all I have for you today. I thank you.